First of all, just before I start to speak, you know, the Gemara says that you're placing Bechleid Asanya. I've been in this yeshiva only for a few months, but it already seems I feel like I'm part of the yeshiva, and I'd like to be makotayv to Rosh Shiva, Rabbi Fishman, Rabbi Cohn, provide a level of what an Emes HaTam HaChacham looks like, and to Rabbi Kalish for the incredible Mesiris Nefesh, Rabbi Max, I don't even know if he's here, for all that they do, running the yeshiva on a daily basis. And I truly feel blessed to be part of this group. And Rabbi Kaufman told me when we were talking about me coming here, one of the things Rabbi Kaufman told me was that there are all types of different yeshivas out there. The one midah that he feels that the boys here excel in addition to the overall mental height, is that the boys in this yeshiva are mavakshin. And it's a mavakshin midah. And a bikush that's taken to the extent that it can be taken, in my opinion, I don't just think it's mine, I think it's really Kaufman's sheet that he built the yeshiva on, is that if somebody is really a mavakish and somebody really works as hard as he can to learn more, to understand more, to work harder, more of a mavakish, if a person is willing to be enough of a mavakish that it takes, that he's really willing to work until he understands something, and he's willing to come to shiurim, he's willing to work on them and understand why his Rebbe learned different than he did, and he's willing to be mavakish and be mavakish and be mavakish, ultimately such a person will become a Talmud Chacham. Because at the end of the day, Moshe Don Kestenbaum hit the nail on the head when he said that it has nothing to do with brains. You know, one of my Rebbeim was the most brilliant person I ever met in my life. His name was Rav Weinberg. He was the Rosh Yeshiva in Baltimore, and he was an incredible Elul. The man was absolutely brilliant. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant person. And he used to tell us that if you look throughout Klal Yisrael, we had Gedolim that were incredibly Elulim, and equal to them, we had Gedolim that were not Elulim at all. Because the level of Aliyah and Torah that somebody has nothing to do with the amount of brains they have, it has nothing to do with the natural gifts they have. And there was one time that he candidly turned to us in a chabura, we were in a small group, and he turned to us and he said, "Trust me, I can tell you that brains doesn't do it." And if there was anybody in the world that could have said it, it was him. And this midah that the yeshiva is built on, and that every bachur in this yeshiva has, or they wouldn't be here, is the basis for people striving to whatever they can. So I feel blessed that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam gave me this chus to be part of such an olam. We're all working to try to become whatever the Rebbeinu Shel Olam has in store for us. That's B'derek HaKlamah. Anytime I make a siyum, the Frada Siyum HaShas, I like to just thank my parents for everything that they've done for me. You know, it's funny, I was talking to somebody recently and he told me that, we were talking about how I started learning. I'll tell you about it in a couple of minutes, but I started learning when I was pretty young. I started learning in the beginning of high school. And somebody asked me, "How were you holding by learning in the beginning of high school? Where did you get it from?" And this person said, "I'll bet that your father learns at night. Or I'll bet your father learns in the morning." And I said, "It's true. It's true." And the truth of the matter is that I'm going to tell you a little bit about what it took, how I got to this point in my life, but there's a basic inspiration that I got from my father, watching him be Maisa Nefesh to learn every morning and every night, even when he was exhausted, even when he had a big case the next day, whatever it was. And that is Taka unique Matana that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam gave me, because the sad reality is that there's an awful lot of Baal Batim out there that don't learn every day, and the kids don't have the schuss of seeing what it looks like to be Mashav Torah enough that you're willing to work for it yourself. So I'd like to thank my parents, my father, my mother, my brothers and sisters who aren't here. And the truth of the matter is that a lot of the successes in my life are built on that. But when I got married, my learning took... Sorry, don't go through. My learning took a completely different dimension. And that was because I was zeichet to a wife that I was zeichet to. And I'll tell you in a couple minutes why I think I was zeichet to that. It's not a discussion of my own. But this Tzimashas Befrat, I can honestly say, is completely my wife. The first one was before I met her. The second one, part of it was done before I met her. This one, I can say, is completely my wife. What do I mean, it's completely my wife? So aside from the fact that everybody knows what it takes for a wife, you don't know, but you've heard, everybody's heard what it takes for a wife to be mice and uppish for a husband to sit and learn. And someday, hopefully, you'll all know. But it's until it's you see it, it's like you're a cast about Moses that in a day we should be able to hear. So there's no question that stam to be zeichet to sit in yeshiva yom v'laila is a gevaliga matana of my wife. That's a more mishubit from a ksuba to support our wives. And our wives are willing to be makabel all. It's a complete matana on their behalf because they understand Torah and they're willing to kill themselves so that we can learn. But this siyum, I did the learning for this siyum not during first seder, not during second seder, not during night seder. I did this whole siyum early in the morning when most people in Lakewood are busy with their kids, taking them to babysitters. I did it during lunch when most people are going home after first seder taking care of their kids. And I did a little bit of it late at night when most people are with their wives. That was when the entire siyum hashas happened. And this was a daily additional Mesiras Nefesh that my wife, maybe one of 5 or 10 wives in the entire Lakewood, were willing to give me that time to learn. It's extremely hard being a kaddish wife, just a regular kaddish wife, but being a kaddish wife to the point that she could tell me, go to yeshiva at 6:30 in the morning, come home at 8 o'clock at night, eat a quick supper, run back out, learn till 11. There are very few people that are zeichet to this. And the truth of the matter is that's why, even a lot of times, and there's no men as dar, and they get married, they don't have that luxury anymore. So this whole scene is really a large part, not just a large part, it's really my wife. So I have to thank my wife from the bottom of my heart. And I have to thank my mother-in-law for all that she's done for us, and for the hadracha, and the help that I've been zeichet to. There's many trigger jokes in Lakewood. Many trigger jokes. And Baruch Hashem, I honestly believe that I have one of the most unique relationships with my mother-in-law of any son-in-law. And a large part I feel it's because my mother-in-law has a unique perspective on life, that of the Bas Talmud Chacham. Name is the Bas Talmud Chacham. And when we speak to her, in many ways I feel like I'm speaking to a Rebbe. And all I can say is thank you. You know, Beis Halevi has a whole shtick in where he explains that it's impossible to really be makritayv. Once anybody does a real favor for you, it's impossible to really ever pay him back. It's for sure impossible to be makritayv by a day talking about it. So all I can say is thank you. And this sefer that I put out for the siyum is called Nachas Mayim, and it's coming out on the yahrzeit of my father-in-law, Yaakov Meir and Moshe. His name is in Oisius and Mayim. And my wife's uncle found that it says in the Sefer Sherish HaAvoda that this is a holiday gazach, he brings a zayar. It says that when a son-in-law puts out a sefer, they thank his father-in-law in Shemayim and they put a crown on. And my father-in-law was killed when my wife was very young, and all she has is the young memories of watching her father come home from a long day of work and running to the Beis Medrash to go learn at night, running to a shul to help them. He was the president of the shul. And a lot of what I feel, that a lot of what the Mesiras Nefesh, the incredible Mesiras Nefesh that's built in my wife, a lot of it came from that initial inspiration that she saw from her father when she was very young, the emotional attachment that she still feels in him today. So although I never met him, I also feel that this Sefer has its roots in my father-in-law, and I hope that the Sefer should be involved with the Aliyah Shoshana film and the Yartza, along with the Siyam. Now, the Minhag HaOlam is that when somebody speaks at us, when somebody makes a Siyam, they say Shabbatayr. And Baruch Hashem, I've made Siyum before, and I've said Shlukach Tayr before. And in fact, if anybody wants to hear Shlukach Tayr from me, there's a book of them here. You need to take a look at them, keep them through for a while. I think that it may be a little bit more beneficial, people may be a little bit more interested, but just hear how in the world this happened. I know it's a very rare thing when somebody makes a Sima Shas. I'd just like to explain to you guys a couple of things that happened when I was a kid. First of all, when I was in high school, when I started high school, I wasn't planning on learning in base matters. I was planning on being in high school for 4 years and going straight to college. That was the plan. And I was going to go be a doctor. And my father had been a medical malpractice specialist, which is, in layman terms, it's somebody who sues doctors. And I used to meet the doctors he was suing, and I used to meet the experts. The experts are the people that will testify in court that a doctor made a mistake. So I met a lot of the big doctors in the United States. When I was with my father, I used to be with him. And for sure, he knew a lot of them. And I felt that that's a very noble profession, and it's a good life. Doctors make a good income. Lawyers will tell you they make more. And that's what I felt that was going to do with my life. And I was in a shul where most of the Baal Batim had gone to yeshiva. And in this yeshiva, and they were in the shul after yeshiva, and they were all Baal Batim, they all had rooms. And I took a look and I said that if these Baal Batim had taken advantage of the time they had in yeshiva, they'd know something. And a lot of these people I was around didn't particularly know much. Not necessarily because they're bad people, just because when they were in yeshiva, they didn't take it too seriously. Fortunately, many people in yeshiva don't appreciate what they have until the day they leave. But never thought the day they start working, they realize what they want. Not the day, for sure the month. And I was determined that I wasn't going to let that happen to me. I was determined that I was going to become a doctor, but at least I'd be able to give a daf yomisha. That was what I was going to do. So I decided when I started high school that I'm going to learn as much as I can in my spare time. And I'm going to do what I can. And if you want to give a daf yomisha, you have to finish us. I mean, how do you teach if you haven't learned it? So Mamela, the goal when I started high school was I'm going to try to finish us. And as I was in a yeshiva, who prides themselves on very little bikis, and I used to get lots of latzonos all the time. My friends, you really know, yeah. And I didn't care, because my attitude was, I'll have the last laugh, and I'm going to keep plugging. And I used a lot of time during high school, and I wasn't learning in shiur, to learn up a number of mishachos. And when I was in 12th grade, the time came to apply to colleges, and I applied to colleges, and we got accepted to a couple, and I was all ready to go. And it was a very funny thing. I saw tshuva from Moshe Feinstein. I was looking, there was a big fight in my class when I was in 12th grade about whether you're allowed to eat Chalav Yisrael or not. And I wasn't mapping off Chalav Yisrael. And I was looking for the tshuva where Moshe writes that you don't have to be mapping off Chalav Yisrael. And I was looking for it, I couldn't find it. And I stumbled on another tshuva. And this tshuva absolutely blew my socks off. The tshuva says, in not as many words, I can't quote you the Lashon anymore, but the Shulah said that somebody that has the achilas to sit and learn and gives it up purely for a profession is going to have to pay for it when they get up to Shemayim. And after that, I couldn't sleep at night. And it was something that was very scary. because during these years in high school, I had grown. And in large part, I had grown because I felt that was it. I watch Bachram in yeshiva. I had a desperation in yeshiva that I don't usually see. Because I knew that the minute 12th grade is over, I'm out. And I needed to accomplish as much as I could. So I took the shuvah to my Rebbe and I asked him what he thinks about it. And he said, I don't know how to tell you this, but it's talking to you. So I thought about it some more. And I researched all the different shuvahs that have ever been written about Halach. Baruch Bar has a whole shtickle at Ben Revolution. Rabbi Chanan has a letter. Rosham Shafal Hirsch wrote about it. Rabbi Yosher Bar wrote about it. And I saw what everybody has to say about college, and I came to the realization that the reason I was becoming a doctor was primarily to make a good living. Now, at the same point, it was a noble profession, and I thought that I'd be going in with the right kavanas, but at the end of the day, it was to make a buck. And Lu Yitzur, the word had gotten out, and it already has started to, that HMOs are going to knock doctor salaries, and already the doctor's telling you maybe you shouldn't do it, go into something else. If you're going for money, it's drying up in a lot of areas. And that was just when the HMOs were getting big. And I realized that this time of learning, I would try to figure out a way to get a profession and still be able to learn. And I found out that if you stay in yeshiva for a few years, you can go to law school. And I had grown up with law with my father all those years. So I decided that I'll take a profession as a lawyer, go to law school, and this way I had 4 more years to learn. So at the end of high school, I was disappointed. I hadn't finished Shas. I finished 13 Masechtas, but I hadn't finished Shas. So I decided that now I'm going to give it, I have 4 more years now. Now I can learn it like a munch. Now I don't just have to finish it, now I may be able to know it a little bit too. And I realized that I had 4 more years to learn. And again, it was only 4 years, 5 years, and after that it's done. If I don't hop around every minute, then it's going to be gone. And the funny thing is that both in high school and base matters, I always had friends, especially the more yeshivish ones, who used to tell me, you're going to be learning your whole life, you have plenty of time, what do you have to be so every minute and every night and learn late, and what do you have to do it for, take it easy, it's okay, you'll get there also, you'll be fine about a bus with half a shas, plenty of this. But the reality was that I felt that I've only got 4 years, and then I'm out. And at that point, I didn't even have a havmina that I wouldn't go to school. I didn't have a havmina that I'd be doing anything other than working in a profession. But at least this way, I'll take advantage of this BTL, and I'll learn a little bit. And the funny thing with learning is that the more you do, in addition to the fact that you come to really enjoy it, but you see less of a value in other things. The more that you appreciate what Torah really is, the more you see how trivial a lot of things which people pursue are. And I was in Eretz Yisrael in Baltimore, which, in my opinion, is the only reason I was like that, to finish Shas, because the Rabbein there, Taka, are all walking around with Shas. You see what it looks like to have Shas. But in addition to that, I saw where people are going, and I felt I'm going to be a lawyer that's teaching Daf Yomi. And I kept learning again in my spare time, and I had 4 years. So if you make a cheshbon, 4 years is a Seder a year. There's 4 main starim in Shas, because Brachas and Nida are only one Masechta each from Zrayim and Tyrus. 4 starim is 4 years. And I made a very simple cheshbon. If a Baal Bas can learn a Baal a day, so a Yeshiva Bachar can learn 2 Baal a day. Because the whole world learns Daf Yomi. I mean, we're going to have a big Seder Shas in Madison Square Garden. And you'll see there's a lot of people out there that learn a lot a day. And it's people that are learning a lot a day while they're working 10 hours a day and while they've got a wife and 6 kids. And it's very hard, and they all manage to do it. So my attitude was that my day, my work is my regular start. And I'll be a Daf Yomi Jew, times 2. That was my attitude. And in each year of Beis Medrash, I did one Seder of Gemara. And the first Seder, the first Siyum I remember I made on Noshim, my grandfather's first yard site, he had just been lifted a year earlier. and Rav Kolevsky told me he wants to fahar me on Nashim. So it's one thing to make a siyum, it's another thing when you know that you're going to get fahar, and it's a third thing to know that the person who's faharing you can fahar you on a word in Rashi anywhere in Shas. So it was a scary thing. And, you know, my attitude was, bring it on. You know, I'm going to do the best I can, and we're going to go for it. You know, why? If I can't pass this test, how am I ever going to teach it to anybody else? So, at the end of the year, he sat me down, and he heard me on the Seder Nashim, and we had a talk afterwards, and he asked me what I'm going to do with my life. And I told him, I'm going to become a lawyer. And he said, you're going to become a lawyer? And I said, yeah. And he said, why? And I told him, well, first of all, I enjoy it very much. Second of all, I know I'm not going to make it a learning. That's far. So I'm going to have to work. And maybe I'll do something that makes a decent living that I enjoy. And he told me, why do you think you're not going to make it? So I said, take a look at the Rebbeim here. And in Eretz Yisrael, as I mentioned, the Rebbeim there, when I was there, the incredible Talmid Chacham, Shragi Neuberger, Rav Kolevsky, Chaim Eisenberger, Zvi Perkowitz, these were incredible, incredible Talmid Chacham. And my attitude was, now it's Rabbi Einstein, it's the culture of Kolevsky, and I saw that it's just, we're worlds apart. And he told me, you don't understand this, is that these Rebbeim were once 19-year-old Bachram also. And when they were 19-year-old Bachram, they didn't know Shas either. They were Bachram. The difference was that they applied themselves and they became who they became. And he told me that it would be baltashvus on me if I become a lawyer. I got my point of life is to be a Marvis Terry in Klal Yisrael, at least at a Smedish level. And he told me, Mamela, I shouldn't even think about becoming a lawyer. And this is really the first time in my mind that I had ever even thought about doing something other than learning, doing something other than a profession. And it was a very, very difficult decision. It wasn't something. And the funny thing is that when I walked out of his room, it was this smoke in the mail room, in the basement of the office, and it was filled with smoke. I came out, you know, it was reeking of smoke. And I came out and I said, you know, it's easy for him to say. He's got a job. He's an old man. So he tells me I should be much nefesh to go learn. Is he offering me anything? No. Does he have anything to offer me? No. So, okay. You know, I hear where he's coming from. I think about it. But it's not going to pay my bills. I don't think it's going to happen. It's a year later. Then, towards the end of the year, he suggested that I go to a double celebration. Now, you guys, I'm sure you know that Baltimore to Rav David Soloveitchik is a little bit of a culture shock. That I think, to this day, I think there were 6 Bachram in the history of Rav David Soloveitchik that ever went from Baltimore to Rav David. And I walked in and they looked at me like I was from Mars. Nobody would learn with me, nobody would talk to me. And I had to prove myself, and I tried to. And after a short time, I started getting chavrusas, I started getting kenilim. And my attitude was that I don't have to throw away my identity. I'm very happy becoming a lawyer. I'm very happy doing what I'm going to do. And I'll become a talmid chacham. Nothing that says that a lawyer can't learn this. No such halacha. So I'll learn here. When I get done, I'll go back home. I'll go to law school. I'll become a lawyer. And then I finish class. And in many ways, it changed my life. One of the ways that it changed my life, this is after my 4th year of Beis Medrash, is that I realized I got to know a lot of the very good guys in yeshiva. And again, the best boys in every single yeshiva in America, in Eretz Yisrael, everywhere, I must meet them. That's all it is. There are guys that are among the best boys of Risk that are masmidim, that are not the biggest politician. There are boys that are incredible by Rav David, they're incredible by Amir, they're incredible in Lakewood, they're incredible everywhere, purely from Hasmat. It's got nothing, brains have so little to do with it, it's almost comical. Yeshiva, the place they talk about Kishrin is in the coffee room. He's about Kishrin, he's big about Kishrin, he's not such a big about Kishrin, but in the Beis Medrash, they're not all talking about Kishrin. In the Beis Medrash, they're talking about Rava, and Abaya, and Arashba, and Ritva, and Tudegar. What do you have to say? What do I have to say? But what you say is based on what you learned. It's not what, and the fact that the Rebbe Shlomo once gave you a good head. So it's been rhyming for a few years, but you don't have anything to show for it if you're not sitting and learning. And what I saw was is that if I don't stay and learn, I'm going to have charata for the rest of my life. And that was really the biggest push, that in addition to the Olam Haba, it was more the Olam Hazeh. I realized I wouldn't be able to look at myself in the mirror if I went to become a lawyer and I gave all this up. But I want to tell you guys that there are two major misconceptions which I saw all the way through. One misconception was that the only people that have to become Talmid Chachamim are the people that are going to do it for a living. That is absolutely ridiculous. The most basic reason why it's absolutely ridiculous is because Rebbeinu Shlomo is mechayev every single Jew to know Kol HaTorah Kulo. It sounds extreme, but the Rambam says it. The Rambam wasn't a Musar Sefer. The Rambam was coming very lemaisa. You have to know Kol HaTorah Kulo. How in the world are you supposed to know Kol HaTorah Kulo if you're working all day? And the Teretz is that obviously the Rebbeinu Shlomo knows that you're working all day, or he knows that you're going to college, or he knows that you're going to be doing other things, and after thinking, he expects you to know Kol HaTorah Kulo. Because if he didn't think that you had the possibility of doing it, he wouldn't tell you that you have to do it. He knows what you have to do, he knows what you have, and he told you to do it. So the Rebbeinu Shlomo didn't just say that the people who have to become Talmidei Chachamim are the people that teach Torah as a living, or people that are pulpit rabbis. That's Aleph. Beis, and Beis is, I think, even more significant, is that not everybody is zaycha to the same level of Yediyas HaChayim. It's true. There are different people there are some people that work as hard as they can, and they don't reach the same level of learning that other people do. But it's clear that when you're in yeshiva, and you're not working, the Rebbeinu Rebbeinu Shlomo Zichra expects you to know as much as you can. I mean, if the Rebbeinu Shlomo parked you in a yeshiva, he didn't put you here to be in the dorm, and then again, the parts of the world. Put you here to learn. And call it Waterbury, call it Lakewood, call it Risk, call it anywhere, it's all the same thing. It's the same Gemara. People used to ask me, what do Baltimore and Reb David have in common? And I used to say they both learn out of the Talmud Bavli. And it's true. Wherever, it's all the same thing. It's all the Rebbeinu Shlomo put you here, and he gave you the unique opportunity that you have to sit and learn for a reason. And there's something that I've come to realize the more I think about it, and I think it's very true. If you'll think about it, I think you'll agree with me. And that is that throughout history, Rabbi Kaufman alluded to it, nobody ever got the chance to learn. If you look around this room, I don't think there's five of us, myself included, that would be in yeshiva. If we would have been born in Europe 150 years ago, we'd be water carriers. Or if we were lucky, we'd own land. But that's it. We wouldn't be coming to Chachamim. We wouldn't be learning the Black Gemara. We wouldn't know what a Gemara looked like. Because it used to be that the only people that went to yeshiva were the Iluyim. Ramay Shadon was very generous in calling me an Iluy, but I can tell you, you can speak to anybody I grew up with. I was never an Iluy. I'm still not an Iluy. My wife will tell you I'm definitely not an Iluy. But it's got nothing to do with brilliance. The Rebbeinu Shlomo would not. So the reality is that none of us would have made it into yeshiva. So why do you think it is that the Rebbeinu Shlomo woke up one day and said, okay, we're coming to the Kates. All the Gedolim are saying it. We're almost there. We're coming to the Kates. Throw everybody into the yeshiva. The water carriers, the shoemakers, the lawyers, the doctors. Throw them all into yeshiva. Why do you think the Rebbeinu Shlomo did that? Why do you think you're here? I mean, there's 92-93% of Jews don't know they're Jewish. And why do you think that you're here? Do you really think you're such an amazing tzaddik that the Rebbeinu Shlomo said that you're bigger than your grandfather was, and your great-grandfather, and your great-great-grandfather, and you are going to give this bezunderes chus to because you're such an incredible Eved Hashem? So maybe some of you feel that way, but I don't. And I feel that the reason that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam parked us in yeshivas, or at least gave us the chance, the opportunity, to have this unique schus of being able to sit and learn quality years, which people never had, and how you even get title, even get time passed when you're married to learn, is because our grandfathers and our great-grandfathers and our great-great-great-great-great-grandfathers were all Meiser Nefesh for Yiddish in many, many, many ways. If you talk to any family, they all have stories. The father, the grandfather, the great-grandfather, this, that. Everybody's got stories. Everybody can tell you about a grandfather or an uncle or this or that. He lost a job for not working on Shabbos. He stood up to the Nazis in Auschwitz. Whatever it was, everybody's got a Meiser. I was misspelled. Even the Sephardim in Baltimore, the Iranians have Meisim too. Even they've got Meisim. They didn't have persecution like the Europeans did. Everybody's got Meisim. Everybody has somebody that was Meisim Adish Vatayra to levels that we could not imagine. And none of them had these opportunities. And we don't have any way of knowing this because the Rebbeinu Shel Olam doesn't tell us these things. But it's God's Kitachon that the reason that we have the abilities that we have to learn, the opportunities, the wealth, everything else that it takes, the wives, why do we have all this? We have all this because the Rebbeinu Shel Olam is giving our grandparents and great-grandparents a last chance. Because all the learning that we do, our parents, grandparents, great-grandparents, going all the way back, gets chosen from. And not all of them had the chance to learn. Most of them didn't. And if they had not gone to yeshiva, and they were mice and nefesh for us in other ways, maybe the Rebbeinu Shel Olam said, listen, I'm going to give you an einikot. I'm going to give you 20 einikot. I'm going to send them to yeshiva. They'll be able to learn more than you ever could have. I'm going to give them rabbeim, yeshivas, dining rooms, dormitories, things which yeshivas never dreamed of. These yeshivas that made it into yeshivas start half the week. I'm going to give it all to them. Everything they want. They can even have designer shirts. They can have everything. Just park yourself in front of the Gemara and learn. They can have it all. So what happens? So we sit back with a bunch of fat, spoiled kids. And we say, that's right. And we are being given monumental opportunities. The chances that we have to learn are literally historic. There hasn't been this level of people that were makir the Rebbeinu Shel Olam, of people in yeshiva since the Baal Shem, without exaggeration. We have never had it. But today, it's understood. You're born into a family who smoke, you go to yeshiva. Do you ever hear of a kid who has to come out of yeshiva when he's 14 to support the family? You don't hear about that anymore. He's got to go get married because his father can't feed him? You don't hear about that. Even from the poorest families. Why not? What else happened? How did we get so rich? How did we end up in yeshivas? All of a sudden, there's so much money to make all these yeshivas. There's so many rabbeim out there that are willing to teach all kinds of different talmidim. Yeshivas, Balabatish, Hasidish, Sfardish, Ashkenazish, everybody. Everybody can be in yeshiva and learn. Where did it all come from? I'll tell you where it came from. You have a Zayda who's sitting in Shemayim begging you to learn every day. And if it's not a Zayda, it's an Alta Zayda. And you, every single time that you learn something, you're being mizakeh. And every time that you pull out a Gemara, and you learn even though the guy next to you is going out outside for shmooze, every single time you do that, you're taking your grandfather up and they're giving him more and more and more things that you can't imagine. And when you get upstairs, you haven't even begun to see it. The Gemara says that person, as far as the Bachram, the Gemara says that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam gives, I could be misquoting the Gemara, but I'm pretty sure it's 310. The Rebbeinu Shel Olam gives 310 palaces to somebody for every single word of Torah. Every word of Torah is 310 palaces. Okay? Now let's just use modern economic terms. Let's say a palace is $1 million. Right? Outside of Borough Park. Right? Let's say a palace is $1 million. Okay? So you get $310 million. Let's just say it's the exact thing. Let's say that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam can't make a palace bigger than $1 million. A little funny, but let's say it's only $1 million. So you get $310 million for every word of Torah that you learn. Every word. You ever look at a daf of Gemara? Anybody ever see how many words there are on the page? I know, in Pirkei, they count the lines. You never counted the words. There's hundreds of words there. So what's 100 times 100 million? Anybody? It's 10,000 million, right? So what is that? It's 100 billion, right? $10,000 And that's it. Every time you sit and learn. And your grandfather up there is begging you to do it. And I'll tell you one more thing, which is even scarier. I learned this in Lakewood. In Olam Haba, for all the mitzvahs that you do, what supports you in Olam Haba is Torah. That's it. You can be the best Jew in the world. If you don't have Torah, you have nothing. So, if you don't learn down here, you can be the biggest Baal Stucka, and the biggest Askin, and the biggest everything. You're going to be a very poor man upstairs. Good, you know, you'll get, don't worry. The Rebbeinu has ways of paying for it. But he wasn't joking when he said, Talmud Torah can make it cool. And you have a grandfather, or a great-grandfather, or nine of them, that are waiting for you to support them. They're waiting for you to open a black Gemara and send it up. And do it day in and day do out, day in, day out. Because that's why you're here. The Rebbeinu Shlom doesn't do things by mistake. Everything that he does for a reason. And the reason is for us to accomplish what he put us down here for. So think about it. If your Torah is mezakeh everybody in your family, all the way back up, parents, grandparents, great-grandparents, great-great-great-great-great-great-grandparents, and he gave you the only chance of all those Torahs to be in a yeshiva and to learn like a mensch, do you really want to face your grandparents, your great-grandparents, your great-great-great-grandparents, and say, look, I know I was supposed to support you for Nitzchius, but that bed was so comfortable. I mean, that's what you're doing. And the sad thing is, you don't realize it. And what happens is that when you get out into the, quote, real world, you regret those years in yeshiva. You do. And then it's too late. Because if you start when you're a baal bus, it's all over. It's not over in the sense that you'll be in Amaretz, but there is absolutely no comparison between somebody that learned seriously in yeshiva and learned as a baal bus, and somebody who just learned as a baal bus. Haraya, take a look. Take a look. The people who are giving Daf Yomi Shiurim are not the people who started learning as baal bus. That I can tell you. The people that are learning, like, giving Daf Yomi Shiurim are the people who learned when they were in yeshiva. And these are the years. And, you know, in this yeshiva, the code word is chill. You know, I see it. You know, I'm not knocking the yeshiva, but everybody likes to chill. And there's nothing wrong with chilling. But understand what you're giving away every time you chill. There's no question that the Rebbeinu Shlom doesn't expect you to do what you can't do. He doesn't expect us to be here till 4 in the morning and back up at 6. But he does expect us to be here as much as we can. He does expect us to give it our every effort. And when you get upstairs and you say, I really tried Rebbeinu Shlom, I really tried. I just couldn't get out of bed for 2 weeks. He's going to say, oh yeah, you tried? Do you know who you're talking to? I know how much you tried. I saw how hard you tried to get to a Yankee Red Sox game. Dad, I saw. So I know what you can do when you try. I know what you can do when you decide you really want to do something. So just think about it a little bit. This is something that is a mechayev for everybody. I don't mean to talk down to anybody here. And something which is a big mechayev for me too. And I'll tell you the truth. I honestly feel I could have finished us another time by now. And if I hadn't wasted the time that I'd wasted, it could be I would have. Or it could be I'd know it better. And I'm going to have to answer to the Rebbeinu for that too. But all of us can try to at least whatever extent we can to really work as hard as we can. And we're not going to be measured. We don't get a free pass because we came to Seder that day. It doesn't work like that. You get up to Shemayim, and the Rebbeinu Shlom says, no, we're starting to cool. You say, well, when I was in yeshiva, I showed up to Seder. I was a good guy. I wasn't in bed. I was the guy in yeshiva. So the Rebbeinu Shlom says, oh, okay, you're not going to say that. You say, cool, okay. Being there, cool. He expects us to produce as much as we can. And every single one of us is here because the Rebbeinu Shlom expects that of us.